Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Let's try that again. Good afternoon, everyone. Good afternoon. Perfect. All right, you're going to get to know a little bit more about me in this session than we did the last session. So my name is Donovan Brown. I am a senior DevOps program manager at Microsoft. I blog constantly at donovanbrown.com, and the best way to keep up with me is to follow me on Twitter. I answer customer questions there. I post a lot of my blog posts there, so it's a great way to keep up with me and figure out what's going on when it comes to DevOps. As you can see on the screen there, I am very, very competitive. I am one of the best air hockey players in the world. I know it's funny. Everyone laughs when I say that. I also drive cars competitively. The reason that I put all that up there is that I bring that competitive nature with me to work every day. I find ways that we can go beat our competition every single day. I want our build system to be the best in the world. I want our release system to be the best in the world. Work item tracking, the entire DevOps pipeline, I want it to be the best in the world because I'm really, really competitive. So that's the reason that I have that on the screen. So what we're going to talk about today is we're going to talk about some of the more detailed look at what I talked about in the mobile DevOps. But this is more of a general DevOps session, not a mobile DevOps session. And I'm going to give you a full end-to-end tour of all of the tools in action. So we're actually going to have an application that you're going to be able to use and participate with while I go back in and show you how all of our tools actually work, including updating a database, right? Which a lot of people, when they do demos, they don't show you how to do the database. It's some real simple hello world application with no database in the back end, which none of us would actually do. We need to actually have a database back there. So we're going to do that today. We're obviously a major player in the DevOps space. We are uniquely positioned as the only vendor that has everything that you need. Like, no one else can say the things that we say here at Microsoft, and I'm going to prove it for you with a demo later on. We went over this in the DevOps, in the keynote, so just a rehash. DevOps is the union of people, process, and products to enable continuous delivery of value to our end users. That is the goal of DevOps, continuously deliver value. Doesn't matter if it's a server app, fat client, or mobile app. We want to continuously deliver value, and I'll show you how we can do that today with the tools that we have. So we have two different tools that we use for this. One of them is called Team Foundation Server. The other one is called Visual Studio Team Services. They are two sides to the same coin. The products are essentially the same. Just one of them is 3 months older than the other. What I mean by that is that Team Foundation Server is deployed every 3 months, where Visual Studio Team Services is deployed every 3 weeks. Every 3 weeks, there are new features there. We are actually living and breathing this DevOps mindset. We're not just saying you should go do it and we're not doing it. What's really fun is that Visual Studio Team Services is versioned, built, and deployed with Visual Studio Team Services. Right? It literally is improving itself. It's like this self-improving system that every 3 weeks it improves itself. And every 3 weeks we add new value to itself, right? It's kind of funny because we use the tools that we're trying to sell you as well, proving that they actually work. This is not vapor, this is real. So what does it mean? What do? They actually provide everything that you need to take an idea and turn it into a working piece of software. Everything. Any language, any platform. You heard me saying that earlier today, and I mean it. Version control, it doesn't matter what files you version. It doesn't matter what language they're in. Git doesn't care. TFVC doesn't care. What we want to do is take those files and protect them for you and then show you what, as the versions, how they change. You got to do agile planning. Without planning, without the ideas, there's no fuel to drive your DevOps pipeline. The idea is where it all starts. That's where we go back in and we say, I have an idea. I want to be able to capture the idea. I want to be able to break the idea down. I want to be able to groom it, and I want to be able to track it to completion. And that's what we do with our agile planning tools. If you're a scrum team or an agile team or even a waterfall team, believe it or not, we have a process template that will guide you through the process to make you more efficient. We also have the ability to do test case management, bug tracking, build automation, continuous deployment, release management, load testing, you name it. Think of everything that you have to do to take an idea and put it into production. That is available to you with VSTS and Team Foundation Server, okay? Could you do all of this with other vendors? Yes. You can go find CI, for example, from Jenkins. You could go get continuous deployment from Octopus Deploy. You could get agile planning from Jira. But now you have to go stitch all those things together where we do it for you. Now, I want to clarify something that I didn't say in the keynote. If you want everything in this list but our automation system, you don't want our build, and you want to use Jenkins, you can actually do that. Every piece of this can be replaced with some other tool should you insist on doing so. But now you become responsible for making sure that tool talks to the rest of our system, right? Who wants to do that? Nobody wants to do that. Let us do that for you, okay? So can you replace it? Yes. So if you're Donovan, we have years and years of Jenkins and we're not switching, fine. You can still use our source control, still use our agile planning, still use our continuous deployment, right? You can still gain value using our system. So yes, it's better if you use it all, but you don't have to use it all if you insist on doing something different. So what are we trying to manage? We are trying to manage this entire stack when we think of DevOps. DevOps starts with the idea and ends with monitoring that idea in production. That is the goal. And what I'm going to show you here is how we can actually do that for you like no one else on the planet. You have an idea and you want to track it, you can track it in Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Team Services. Again, at this point, there is no code. So we don't know if it's Java, .NET, Android, iOS, nor do we care. It is an idea, it is a bug, or it is a test case, and we can track it in Visual Studio Team Services. Then it's time to start talking about infrastructure. And we can use a technique called infrastructure as code. Infrastructure as code is where you take the desired infrastructure and you actually describe it as code. If you're going to be using ours, you're going to be using something called an Azure Resource Manager template. It's just a JSON file. And it's a way to actually describe the resources in Azure that you would like us to spin up. Let's say, for example, I'm a Java developer, and I want to build a web application that runs on Java 8 and Tomcat 8, and is backed by SQL Server. I can actually tell in a JSON file, I need a web app with Tomcat and Java 8, and I also need a SQL Server. That's what the file says. And then we give that file to release management, and it'll stand the environment up for you. If the resources don't already exist, they will magically just exist. And then I can deploy my application there. Let's say, for example, I stand it up, but then I accidentally delete my SQL Server. If I run it again, it'll leave the two that were there and then stand up a new SQL Server for me automatically. Right? It's smart enough to say, oh, you have two of the three things you need. Let me add the third thing for you. Right? So if I make a mistake, it'll correct the mistake for me. Let's say, for example, we're .NET developers. Right? .NET's awesome. And I want to do an ASP.NET application. So I want to spin up a Windows machine. But before I can actually deploy my web app there, for ASP.NET to work, I need IIS, I need the .NET framework, and I need port 80 open, right? Otherwise, my app won't work. We can actually do that using desired state configuration. Desired state configuration is comparable to Ansible, Puppet and Chef. I think of all those, and I think of desired state configuration at the same time. It allows me to actually write another file, a piece of code that says, I demand that that server have .NET Framework 4.5 on it. I demand that that server have IIS installed. I demand that port 80 be open on that server. It's just a simple file that says those things. And then I give it to the server. I don't have to download any bits. I don't have to click any buttons. I don't have to navigate through any wizards. I just give the server that file, and the server will make that true. If I were to go onto the server and for whatever reason disable IIS, it will literally put itself back the way it was supposed to be. That is called configuration as code, right? So we can do all these techniques inside of Team Foundation Server and Visual Studio Team Services using desired state configuration. Now, I mentioned Chef and Puppet and Ansible. You can actually use those tools in replace of DSC should you choose to, right? Again, you can do everything with Microsoft, but if you insist, you can replace any technology you want with someone else's technology if you insist. Now, we have the idea, we've planned it, we've groomed it, we have our infrastructure stood up, we have it configured properly, and now it's time to start installing our application upon that infrastructure. What I really like about our deployment technology is it's BYOB. Bring your own binary. I don't care what your binary is. It could be a WAR file if you're Java. It could be an IPA if you're doing mobile development. It could be a zip file, an MSI. It could be anything that you want. If you give us your binary, even a NuGet package, we will help you deploy that binary onto whatever environment you want. Windows, Linux, Mac, iOS, Android, Xbox, does not matter. Wherever you want your code to run, we will help you deploy it. Other technologies like Octopus Deploy, for example, great tool, but everything has to be a NuGet package, right? So if you don't understand NuGet, or you don't have the way to build NuGet, you have to first learn that. Then when you figure that out, give that NuGet package to Octopus Deploy, and then it'll finally deploy it for you. But if I'm already producing zip files, or I'm already producing MSIs, why do I have to take that extra step? With our tool set, you don't have to. Just give us whatever you produced, and we'll go deploy that for you, right? Less effort, less steps. How many of you program in ASP.NET? How many of you have ever been burned by a web.config? Everyone raise your hands again. Right? Because you've been on there and you've made a change and you left off an angle bracket and you got the yellow screen of death. Or you put in the wrong connection string and it pointed at the different database than it was supposed to. Yeah, he's laughing because he's done this before. I don't know why you're laughing, because that's usually never a laughing matter when that happens, but yeah, I've done it before too, right? That's usually a really, really bad thing. So what we do is we decided to, we'll do that for you. It's a technique called tokenization. And what you do is you give us a tokenized version of your web.config. All the important values are just tokens. They don't actually exist there. Then you tell our system, when you're in dev, use these values. When you're in QA, you use these values instead. And then when you're in production, please use these values. And then the system updates your web.config for you, right? Not you. No more human intervention. To do this right, humans should not touch anything. No humans. Humans bad. Computers good. So now I have my environment completely stood up. I have my application installed, and I have all my configuration correct. Now it's time to start testing. Now, most of us, when we want to start testing, want to have a known good data set, right? We want to know what data is in the database, because that sometimes there's assumptions that I make on what I expect to see on the screen based on the data in the database. And if that data is not there or the data is incorrect, then sometimes my tests will fail. Not because the code is broken, but because the data inside of my database is not accurate any longer. So what we do is we give you a technique, this works for SQL Server, called a backpack with a B. I'm going to talk about DACPACs later on in our demo, but backpacks actually contain data as well as the schema of the database. I can then give this to Visual Studio Team Services, and it will populate your database with the known data set from the backpack. That way, you know that every time you run your automated test, that they're going against data that you expect to be there, right? So it actually eases your testing. We obviously can run any code, automated test you like, coded UI test, web test, load test, Selenium, I'm a big fan of Selenium. Selenium's a fantastic testing framework, and we integrate really, really well with Selenium. You can run them during your deployment. Matter of fact, we're going to run them today. Now, I am a big believer that manual testing is important and will be important for a very, very long time. You want to automate as much as you possibly can, but if there is a user interface on your application, chances are a human being at least needs to look at it. Did that chart render correctly? Charts are nefariously difficult to test with automation because the computer doesn't know if the chart looks right. It's just an image, right? So, but a human being can quickly say those lines are going the wrong way. So I believe that we're going to have manual tests unless you're doing something like a web API. There's no user interface. You could probably get 100% automation and be pretty safe. But if there's a user interface, chances are you want someone to look at it. And what our system is able to do is pause for you and let you go spend time looking at your application, getting the confidence that everything is okay before you then give it permission to proceed, right? But what's nice is it's configurable. If you want it to be 100% automated and you trust your automated test, it'll do it for you. If you don't have that kind of trust and you want a human being to get involved, we allow you to do that as well, right? So that's what we're doing here with our notifications. Release management, one of my favorite products, allows us to actually solicit approvals from people. Right? I was asked just a moment ago in one of our customer meetings, I'm not sure I want my code to go all the way to production completely automated. No problem. If you'd like someone to go in there and look at the code, verify that everything's been done correctly before it automatically goes into there, we can do that with approvals. Approvals are where you say, hey, Donovan, go look at that code for me. Go make sure it looks good before we then promote it to the next environment. Say again? So the question is, the comment is, this is basically code reviews. what you do while we're waiting for approval is completely up to you. If you want to do code reviews, if you want to issue a pull request, if you want to go run the code yourself, that's completely up to you. Our system is saying, hey, we're waiting for you to come back and tell me that you're happy with whatever it is that you've done. And now that you're happy, I will then continue the process. Okay? Very good question. But it could be anything that you want us to wait for. And then what we really want to do is, remember the definition of DevOps says, I want you to deliver value. I don't want to just deliver software. I want to deliver value. Now, how do I know if I delivered value? I have to monitor the application as it's being used to determine, hey, I added a new feature. Did anyone even use that new feature that I added? Because if not, I didn't add any value. I spent a week adding a new feature that we've been running for an entire month, and no one has found it. So what did you do last month? You just copied files to a server, but you did not actually deliver value. So you have to be able to monitor the application, see how it's being used, and determine, yes, what we did was good because 90% of our users are now using that new feature and they love it. Or maybe what we did wasn't so good and everyone who uses it crashes. That's monitoring information that you can get as well and go back and quickly make a correction to it. Microsoft is uniquely positioned as the only vendor in the universe that can do this from beginning to end. There's tons of vendors who can do one part or the other, but no one but us can do the entire thing. And we do this no matter what the application type, we do this no matter what language you program in or what platform you target, we are the only ones that can do this. And we do it ourselves at Microsoft using the tools that I'm telling you to use, right? So it's not as if we're telling you to do one thing and then we do something else internally. We're eating our own dog food, as we say in the United States, right? We believe in this and we're doing it every day. So it's people, process, and products. That's really the DevOps conversation. Now, people are clearly the most important part of this conversation. They are also the most stubborn part of this conversation. They're the hardest ones to convince because it's 30 years of doing it the same way, and now I'm asking you to do something different, right? It's very, very difficult to change the people part. But you must get the people on board. Otherwise, all the tools in the world aren't going to help you. However, there's a funny little thing here. If the tools are good enough, if the products are so slick and so fun to use, it can sometimes influence the people, right? If you're really going to make my life that easy by using this tool, if you're going to reduce so much friction from my life, maybe I need to rethink this whole DevOps thing. So yes, people are the hardest part, but I think if you produce the right products, you can influence the people to get on board and get excited about DevOps. And then what our tools are going to do is help shape your process. So I like to say, here at Microsoft, we produce the products that are going to shape your process and enable your people to do amazing things. Right? That's my goal. Every day I go to work is, how do I make my product so cool that I can actually help our customers be successful with DevOps? Now, I said something else earlier. I need your help to do that. And that sounds odd, but I do. I need your help to make sure that this is true. If you choose Jenkins over our new build system, please tweet at me why you did that. Because if I don't know why you chose them, then I don't know how to go fix that problem. If you tell me they do this better than you, I will go fix our product and we will do it better than they do. But I need to know what it is that you believe is better in someone else's product than mine. You can't just go use them and not tell me and then be mad at me for not fixing it. If you go use someone else's product, please just take a second and tweet at me, Donovan, sorry, we selected XYZ because they did this and I need that. And then I will go back and add that to our products too. You guys help me do that? All right, thank you. Hopefully it's a small price to add. Oh yeah, by the way, you have to follow me, otherwise I ignore everything that you say. All right, so I gotta get my Twitter followers up. We're gonna talk about three different areas, the planning, the dev test, release, and monitor. And we're gonna go really quick. I'm gonna show you all of that in a demo. Everyone on your mobile device, go to peopletracker.us. This is your only chance to be on your phones and play around. Go to peopletracker.us, and there's an application there. And what I want you to do is I want you to click on the people menu, and I want you to put your name in the list. So I'm gonna open this app up in a few minutes, and we're live streaming this. So if you wanna be famous, do it really quickly, because I'm not gonna scroll the list. I'm only gonna let the people on the first list of the first screen be seen. But the demo that I'm about to do uses every one of these technologies in it, right? So it uses Docker and Linux and Git, and it uses infrastructure as code and JUnit and Java. I really, really wanted to go to New Zealand a couple years ago. So I built this ridiculous demo that said, I was going to use all this technology in one demo. And they accepted it. And then I had to go figure out how to do all this technology in one demo. Because I kind of oversold what I thought I could actually do because I really wanted to go. But they accepted it. And interesting enough, I was able to get it all to work. And what I'm going to do for you today is I'm going to show you this demo. So has everyone gone to the app? Have some people gone to the People Tracker app and put your names in there? Anyone playing along here? Well, I'll find out here in just a second. So let's go over here real quick. And I'm going to switch over to this guy. So this is the application that I'm talking about. This is peopletracker.us. And it's an application right now. And I'm a big agilist. I love Scrum. I really think it's a very powerful methodology. And what we're going to do is we're going to pretend today that we are a very highly functioning Scrum team. The goal of every sprint is to show our stakeholders and our product owners the output of our last sprint. You should show them working software every single sprint. So what we're going to do is we're going to pretend that we're in that meeting right now. So my goal is to show my stakeholders and my product owners the application that we were able to produce and show that it's actually working software. The goal is to then solicit feedback from our stakeholders and our product owner on, are we going in the right direction? Are there new features you'd like to see? And we'll add that to our product backlog, and we'll add it in the next sprint. So if I were to then come over here and click on people, you can see these individuals have gone ahead and used the application. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to prove that the application's real, if that's not proof enough. I'm going to click on new. I'm going to add myself here. So we'll add Donovan Brown. And I create. And as you can see, Donovan Brown was added. So I've proven to our stakeholders, hey, guys, this is what we did in our last sprint. But we get some feedback from him. He says, you know what, Donovan? This is a great start. However, if you had two Donovan Browns in this list, how would I tell one Donovan Brown from the other? It'd be really nice if you added a middle name. Now think about that change. Adding a middle name means changing every layer of my application. The database has to be changed to have that new column. And you'll finally see how we can actually do that. Like I said, a lot of demos, this happy path, web app with no database in the back end. Like, of course, anyone can do that. But what if I actually had to change the database? I'll show you some of the techniques that we have to do that. I have to change their web service. So the architecture of this is actually a web service sitting in front of a database. And then I have the front end that you're seeing now calling into that web service. So I'm going to jump back over into slides here real quick so that you can see, now that we've decided what we're going to do, how this all actually comes together. Let me go back. So I want you to see everything that's about to happen. Because once it happens so quickly that you don't really, I don't think you get an appreciation for what actually is happening in real time. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go inside Visual Studio, and I'm going to commit a change to go add the middle name. I'm going to change the database schema. I'm going to change the web service in the middle tier, and I'm going to change the user interface. And right here in front of us, I'm going to go deploy that application using Release Management, and we should all be able to go back in if we want to and add our middle name. Now, after I commit my code, that commitment goes down into our build system inside of VSTS or TFS, and it realizes I need to go build my code now that I've seen a commit. What happens then is I basically have to compile it, test it, running unit test, and I can run any unit testing framework I want and even collect code coverage. I'm then going to publish that information, for example, my Selenium test. Those need to be published so that I can go back and grab them later in my release. Some of my other artifacts, like zip files for my web services, all need to be published. Now, we're going to be using Docker. Docker is a really hot technology that allows you to build images, images you can then run on a host inside of a container. So what I'm also going to do here is I'm going to build that Docker image, and then I'm going to publish that Docker image to what we call Docker Hub. So Docker Hub is a registry of images that I can then download and run inside of my host in a container. And what I want to do is I only want to build my image once. I'm then going to take that image, and I'm going to run it three different times, once for dev, one for QA, and one for prod. In each environment, that image is pointing at a different web service, which is pointing at a different database. So the tokenization I told you about, that all happens as well. The ability for me to pass in at runtime the connection string, the URL to my web service, all happen magically by Release Management. I don't have to touch any of it myself. After that, I package up my artifacts, and I send it back to Visual Studio Team Services, where Visual Studio Team Services says, ah, the build is done, and Donovan's configured continuous deployment. So now I need to take the artifacts of that build, and I need to start releasing them out into the wild. So what we're going to do then is go back to our agent, and we're going to deploy our database. How many of you deploy against or develop against SQL Server? How many of you know what SSDT means? That is scary, right? Because only one person raised their hand. SSDT stands for SQL Server Data Tools, okay? And what that allows me to do is take the schema of my database and store it as a project in source control. When I build an SSDT project, I get something called a DAC pack. That's with a D, not a B like I said before. A DAC pack is a digital fingerprint of the schema of your database. It knows exactly what every object in your database looks like. I then take that DAC pack file, I give it to release management and say, you see that database over there? Make it look like this DAC pack. Oh, and by the way, of course, don't lose any of my data. At runtime, it figures out exactly what all the alter scripts, alter tables, and alter whatever needs to happen. It alters your database without losing a single line of data. So all the names you saw in the list, they should still be there when I'm done if I do this correctly, right? If this magic trick happens the way it's supposed to, you're going to see a new column added and none of the data that was in there lost. I will not write a single line of SQL, right? I don't have to write SQL scripts. I don't have to concatenate them. I don't have to have my DBA prove them. I don't have to have anyone go manually run them. This is all done for me automatically using SSDT or SQL Server Data Tools. So I deploy my database. Now my web services are web apps sitting inside of Azure. Okay, so they're just web apps. I have three of them, one for each of my environments. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to deploy my web app. And then what I'm going to do is I have three Linux machines that are my Docker host also running in Azure. And I'm basically going to tell them, hey, I need you to go pull that image down from a Docker hub. And when you do, run that image for me, pointing at the right stuff. And then we should see the changes immediately in our UI. And then what I'm going to do is I'm going to wait for approval, right? So the system will stop and say, okay, Donovan, I've done one environment. Do you want me to go do the next environment? If we're able to add middle name, I would say yes, and the system would happily move it into the next environment. So does everyone know what I'm trying to do? There's a lot of moving parts here. There's a lot of technology, and I'll show you exactly how I configured it. And hopefully, everything will work the way it's supposed to. So here we are back in our IDE. So what we're going to do here, go to my changes. I didn't actually make my changes yet, so I'm going to go here and I'm going to make my changes. So I'm going to cheat again like I did earlier. I have a script that will go and make all the changes for me so you don't have to see me type. So if I go to middle name, add, and type go, it just changed all the files for me. So over here on the right-hand side, I now have changed my database schema, and I'll show you what that looks like. So remember I said it's just another project. Here's my solution. Here's my SSDT project, and what I can do here is if I open this up, it'll start to show me all of the different objects, simple people table, and if I open that, this middle name is brand new, right? That middle name was not there before. I've added it, and it's now part of my project, and when I build it, it'll deploy that for me, and inside the rest of these things, I've gone ahead and made the necessary changes, including my UI test. My UI test originally did not know about middle name. So it didn't know how to add it. But now my UI tests understand that. So when I run them, the new users that my test run should actually have a middle name on there as well. So now all I have to do is go ahead and commit this. So I'm going to say adding middle name. I think 221 is the one that I want. There's a work item, I believe it's 221, that should have the tell me to go add the work item, add the middle name. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to hop over into the web browser here. And if this is doing what it's supposed to be doing, I should have a new build running. Perfect. So we have a build called 663. And 663 is triggered because of the commit that I just made. And this is one of the new things that we've done to our build system, is that you get to see everything in real time. So you don't have to wait till the build is done to go see why it failed. If your build takes 3 hours long, sometimes you don't know if it's hung or if it's still working, and you just keep waiting. But now you'll be able to tell instantly if it's actually doing what it's supposed to be doing or if it's hung or broken for some reason. So what does this actually look like? If I go back and I show you the anatomy of this particular build, you can see it's doing all sorts of cool stuff. ASP.NET 5 is still, I think it's in RC1 or RC2 right now, but it's still not RTM. So our build system has to do some special things to build it, right? Because it's DNX and DNU and all this cool stuff that you have to do. So what's really nice is that anything that you can do from a command line, I can do as part of my build. So what I did in the very first line there is I used an arbitrary string of PowerShell and said, hey, go download the latest version of the DNU if you don't already have it. Make sure that my build agent, and I can run this in the cloud on the hosted build agent or on my own build agent in on-prem, and it will go and make sure that it's up to date, has the latest version of all the tools installed on the agent before it tries to do my build. Then it goes off and installs all my NuGet packages for me. This NuGet package could come from NuGet.org or our own personal package management. So if you see up there, it has package. Right here, it has the word package. This is an internal package service provided for you by Visual Studio Team Services. So if you don't want to have to go out to the internet every time you need to resolve your own packages, you can do it internal to your VSTS and your TFS, right? So this allows you to also make sure that your teams are only using packages that you've approved them to use, right? So that they're not going off and getting some random dangerous package from the internet. They can only get packages from where you say they're allowed to get packages from. Good question. The statement was just for NuGet. Today, yes, but that's not the future. We want to have Bower and Maven, and we want to have Docker repositories, the whole nine yards. NuGet being the most popular was obviously where we started, but that technology is agnostic, and we will be able to extend it to support other package management. Great question. I'll have to give you some of those little dollars when I'm done. I also have a DevOps sticker for you, because that was an awesome question. Okay, so we always are going to do our Visual Studio build, and then we're going to go off and run some unit tests. We're going to go run another piece of PowerShell that actually packages my Docker image up for me. And then you see these two little Docker tasks. One of them builds the image, and the other one sends the image over off to Docker Hub for us, so it's safely kept there. And then finally, I go and copy all my test results up. So hopefully, fingers crossed, this build worked the way it was supposed to. I should have a new successful build. So here is 663, and here are some of the results that you get. You saw some of this in the keynote. You can see right there where it says bug 221, add middle name to the people table. I simply did a hashtag inside of my comment. And Visual Studio Team Services was able to figure out, oh, he's working on that particular work item. Let me associate that work item to this build so I can always see that. It also shows me the commit that Donovan actually authored. Shows me my code coverage, which is pathetic right now at 1.52. I would never accept that, by the way, if that was one of my teams. That is really bad code coverage. 1.52% is really, really low. But we are actually running, we only run one test, so that's why it's so bad. And what we're also going to do is go down here and look at our deployment again. And as you can see, it's telling me that this is actually in progress at the moment. Now, one of the things that it did, remember, it actually goes to Docker Hub. So if I come over here and refresh this, 662 should actually turn into 663, hopefully, here. If I get is my internet not working out right? There it is. So just a minute ago, it actually took 663, that image that it built, and gave it to Docker Hub. And now using 663 as my ID, I can go to release management and say, hey, I need you to pull down image 663. That way I can have multiple images in flight, right? Because if I need to positively identify 662 versus 661, I just tell it which one, and it will go pull the right version of that image. Or I need to roll back. 663 is no good. I need to roll back to 662. It's sitting there ready for me. I can pull it back down and instantly start running 662 instead, okay? So we shouldn't need Docker Hub anymore. So what do we do next? What we do next is we come over here and we start moving our code through our pipeline. So what should be happening is we should have another release trying to make its way through the pipeline. As we can see now, release 1, 2, 3, that's funny, is actually making its way through, and then QA and production are basically 1, 2, 2. So what we want to do now is go see what in the world's happening. So if we come here, we'll be able to see our release. So that very first task is taking the DAC pack that I created, and it's applying it to the SQL server for dev. It's adding that new column, writing all the SQL necessary, and not losing a single line of data, fingers crossed. It then goes out into Azure, takes the web service, and actually deploys that into an Azure web app for me. And then it goes and tells Docker, hey, Docker, go download the image 663 and run it on this particular Docker host for me. And then finally, I start using Selenium. I like Selenium because it allows me to do Firefox, Chrome, IE, whatever browser you want, it'll run the test for me. And what I'm doing now is I'm running Firefox test in this one, but in QA, I did something slightly different. If you come down here to QA, I decided that I want to run those in Chrome instead. So I run them in Firefox in one environment, I run them in Chrome in another, and then I even added cloud-based performance test here at the bottom. So I can go back in and see, will this app perform under load after it gets deployed into production? So go ahead, you have another comment? Okay, so the question is, can I use and configure Selenium Grid in my build? The answer is yes. Chuck Sterling, a Microsoft employee, actually has a great blog post on exactly how to use Selenium Grid with our build system. All right, so I would just search for that, but he has already figured all that stuff out for you. Again, can I trigger Selenium Grid from a command line or a REST API? The answer is yes. So the answer is definitely yes. Anything I can do from a command line, I can do from our build system. Anything, including configuring different types of items. The other thing I want to talk about real quick before we go any further is the idea of approvers. The system will happily deploy into dev, but it will not deploy into QA. It will wait for me to come in and say, it is okay for you to go to QA. And the reason that I do that is I've worked on teams where QA takes 2 weeks, but CI is happening constantly. And you don't want every build that your build team or your dev teams to go rushing into QA, because if it does, it invalidates the test results, and the poor QA people have to start all over again. So what I do is I put my QA lead, Sam Guckenheimer in this case, to be the approver going inside of QA, which means they have to get his approval. The tool says, Sam, can I go in your environment? And Sam can say no. And the system will say, okay, fine, I won't touch your environment. Or Sam can say yes, but I want you to do it a week from today, Saturday night at 4 a.m. The system will say, fine, Saturday night at 4 a.m., I will wake back up and I will deploy your environment for you while you're off enjoying your weekend so that when you come in on Monday, you have a fresh new copy of the code. So you get to control when we deploy to your environment. Now, another time that I usually use approvers is on the post-deployment. I like to put my test or a QA person here as well. And the reason why I do that is because, let's say, for example, I go and I run exploratory testing, manual testing, and I find lots and lots and lots of bugs. Would I want the code to continue into production? Absolutely not. So what I'm able to do is put my QA lead also as the post-deployment approver. And instead of giving his approval for it to go into the next environment, he can say, no, the quality is no good. I don't want this to go any further. And then the dev would have to give him a new release that he would then try to go through his QA cycle. You have complete control over who is the approver going in and out of your environment. They can be individuals or they can be groups. So if you put a group there, anyone in the group has the authority to give the thumbs up. And then the code will continue forward. And as you can see from the more options here, you have a lot of options on how you control what happens in each one of those. So that being said, let's go back here, and hopefully, if I were to simply refresh the screen, as you can see, we were able to actively deploy an application that you guys were actively using right from underneath you without losing a single line of data. Not only did some people go back and already fix their middle name, but if you scroll down to the bottom, this was done by a Selenium test. I actually ran a UI test during my deployment. I deployed the code, and then I said, hey, go fire up a web browser for me and go put your name in there and make sure that middle name actually works. Had this failed, the entire release would have stopped in its tracks and said, hey, Donovan, something's not good. You need to go back in there and actually make a correction. But now I like this. So now that I'm happy with this, I can go back into Visual Studio and I can actually go ahead and start to approve this. So I'm going to go back over here and we're going to pull up the user interface here directly from build that will allow me to go and approve this particular release. Because remember what I said is that it's going to wait for my approval. So let's go back to my releases. Sorry for all the clicking. There we go. All right, so the question is that some of my tests actually produce screenshots and other files. Depending on the test output, it could actually be displayed directly from here. So for here is all my test results. And depending on the plugin that you're using, they might either provide a URL to that information. Like, for example, if you use the test cloud from Xamarin, the test cloud will actually give you a link in the summary that will take you to their screen with the videos and the pictures. Same thing with Perfecto Mobile as well. So it all depends on how the extension for your test framework was produced on where that artifact will be stored. Okay? So as you can see here, Sam is supposed to approve going to QA. I happen to be an administrator, so I'm going to override Sam. And I can say looks good. Because right now, if I were to come back here and go to my, I'll show you this, I'm going to go to my QA environment. My QA environment still only has middle name. There is no, that means no middle name here yet because I haven't approved it to go to QA yet. But what I'm going to do now is come back over here, give it my approval. And now what the system's going to do is it's like, oh, okay, they're happy. I'm now going to start moving the code into the QA environment. So now what I can do is go to logs. And from logs, I can see in real time exactly what's happening with my release. And as you can see, we're going to run some more Selenium tests, and we're actually going to run a performance test to prove that it performs correctly. And then I can rinse and repeat this all the way through to production. So that is a full end-to-end demo showing you that we can deploy anything that you want, anywhere that you want, including database changes. Now, some of you might be thinking, yeah, that's great for SQL Server, Donovan, but we use DB2, or we use Oracle, or we use MySQL, and that SQL Server data tool stuff you just showed me, that won't work there. That's true. But remember what I said in the keynote. We partner with as many people as we possibly can. I use Perfecto Mobile as an example. But we also partner with Redgate. Redgate is a tool that allows you to do all the same stuff for databases with DB2 and Oracle and MySQL. So if we don't support you, then we probably have a partner that does, and their extension is now inside of our marketplace. Let me show you what that looks like. So if I come over here to the marketplace, I believe that's the little link there, we have an entire list of partners and even competition who is coming in and extending what we do. LaunchDarkly. We talked briefly about feature flags. Feature flags are a perfect way for you to be able to hide data before you move forward or hide features until they're ready. LaunchDarkly turns that into a service for you. Redgate, the ReadyRoll product, allows you to be able to do the database changes for non-SQL Server. Slack, how many of you guys are using Slack in your organization? A lot of you. So are we, right? It's a great way to collaborate. So we made sure that it integrates with Visual Studio Team Services. We're going to have some Docker things coming in here as well. Hockey App, right? Hockey App is the acquisition I talked about for mobile development. Octopus Deploy, clearly a competitor of ours. But we don't mind because, again, just because you're using them for deployment, you might still be using us for testing. And you might be using us for source control and for continuous integration and work item tracking. There's so much value that we add. If you insist on using one of our partners or frenemies or competitors, that's fine because it still integrates inside of Microsoft's Visual Studio Team Services and Team Foundation Server. So hopefully you saw a full end-to-end demo. That's what I wanted to come and share with you guys today. I'm welcome to answer any questions that you have. Thank you. Okay, let me answer that one first. So the question was, what about any framework and the ability to use migration scripts, right? Now, I use migration scripts personally. It's a fat client application that I install, and I use SQL Server. And it changes the DevOps story a little bit, right? Because the migration script itself has everything that it needs in it to actually upgrade itself to the next version. So all you actually have to do is deploy the next version of the application. And on FireUp, you can actually use a database initializer that says, I need you to go run the migrations necessary to bring this database into spec. And it does the same thing without losing any data, right? So you would basically just start your application, set the right initializer, and your database would basically upgrade itself upon startup, right? So would I need to do this? Not necessarily, because it's actually handled for you as part of the technology of Entity Framework. If you're not using that, you're using database first, or you're not using code first where you can do migrations, then this is a perfect solution for that. Yeah, it depends on how you're doing your development, right? Yeah, absolutely. So what's your second question? Okay, great. So the statement is about tokenization and how I handle changes to my web.config. Azure web apps actually have a feature to where you can actually tell it, These are the connection strings I want you to use, and even for app settings. These are the values I want you to use for anything you see in app settings for this particular web app. They're a fantastic feature, right? And you can use those in lieu of tokenization. However, they have limited application. They work for what? Connection strings in app settings. What if I have a Redis cache? Redis cache is configured in your web.config in a completely different custom section that is not handled or addressed by web apps. So if you have a more complicated application, it simply doesn't scale. For me to get to those other areas, I have to use something more heavy like tokenization. If you're lucky enough, and there are applications that only have connection string changes and app settings changes, it's a perfect solution to use the settings that are actually in your web app. Because then again, it's not managed inside of your pipeline. No one has to see values they don't have permissions to. It's a really good solution. But again, it depends on the app in which you're developing and how much of your web.config has to be changed. And there's no reason you actually can't use the combination of them. I could still use tokenization to get to my Redis cache and still use configuration settings and app settings in my web app to get to the items that are actually available. Because it's actually interception. It doesn't write the values that you have in your web app into your web.config. It actually intercepts any request for your connection string and then gives you the information that comes from your web app. So there's no reason you can't use them both, but just realize it has limited application. Great. You already have one, but you want another one? Okay. Go ahead. Oh, good. So the question is everything that you just showed me only work in the cloud, or is it also supported on on-prem? Visual Studio Team Services, although it is a cloud resource, can deploy anywhere, including on-prem. We had a scenario once where a customer said, this was before we had release management on-prem. It was update 2 where we brought this cloud, the web-based version to the on-prem. They said, Donovan, we want to use Visual Studio Team Services for release, but we want to connect to our Team Foundation server that's on-prem. We never want our source code to ever see the internet, but I want release management to tell it to build, and then I want it to release on-prem without ever seeing the internet. We could do that for them. Because what you would do is install your agent on-prem where you want it, and then register it with VSTS, and then we just told it what to do when, and it literally went and got code from behind the firewall on another server, and then deployed it on another server behind the firewall. So what's the other question? I'm not sure. Application security in what perspective? You want to do like pen testing or penetration testing? I see. Right. So again, those are tools that all have command line interfaces. So let me show you exactly how I would do that. Okay, I follow the question, I believe. So what I would do is I would go back to edit anything that I want. And the tasks that we have available to you, these are really, really easy to add yourself. They are actually open source. You can go to GitHub right now and see every line of every one of these that we've written and use those as samples when you want to write your own. So if you don't see Fortify in here or you don't see Product X in here, but you want to use it, you can literally go write your own task in either PowerShell or Node.js. I kind of lean towards Node.js. I'll explain why. I love PowerShell. Jeffrey Snover is a personal friend of mine. Big fan of PowerShell. But if I write it in PowerShell, what operating system does it run on? Windows. Windows run today, Windows only. But our agent runs on Linux and it runs on Mac. So if you write your task in Node.js, it runs on all three of them, right? So if I'm writing a task today, I'm going to write it in Node. However, you don't even have to write the task. I write tasks because I'm anal retentive and I like it to look cool. But you can come here where it says utility, and you can run any batch script, any command line, any PowerShell, and even any shell script on a Linux and on a PC. So Fortify, I bet you, has a command line interface, right? And what you would be able to do is you would simply add this task at the right point of your build or your release, and then call out to Fortify and say, go do what you want to do. I don't have anyone that I recommend, but we integrate with almost everyone, right? And we're hoping that some of them will start adding to our marketplace, so that it makes using their tools a little bit easier. Okay, does that answer your question? You want a sticker? Yeah. The cost? Okay. So the cost of using the service. Everyone listening to my voice right now can go to visualstudio.com and create a VSTS account for $0. Right. Exactly. For 1 to 5 people who do not have an MSDN. If you have an MSDN, you can add 100 people as long as all of them have MSDN. You still don't pay a dime. Right? The cost is only for non-MSDN people. Those are the people we actually have to, they burn one of your free licenses, right? So that still doesn't cost you anything. So you're saying you hire a consultant to come in from a partner who wants to help? If they have an MSDN, their MSDN would qualify them to connect to your TFS or your VSTS. Now, let's talk a little bit more about cost. We also have build servers for you in the cloud that you can actually use for free until you run out of minutes. You can install one private agent on-prem. That is also free. When you want to have more agents, you pay, right? And it's basically you pay for the agents, things like that. So it's still cheap, but... Yes? TFS on-prem is slightly different because they don't have the cloud-based hosted agents. So what I'm talking about there is specifically VSTS. You have one in the cloud, and you can have one on-prem, or what we call one private agent. It doesn't have to be on-prem. You could install it in Azure in a VM there if you wanted to. But that's called one private agent, and those you get for free. It's the additional agents that you have to do. I'm two over already? Okay. So one more question. I'll give you a sticker, one more question, then I'll get off. There's no one behind me, though, right? Y'all just want to go home. That's all. Stop talking. Okay, one more question.
Okay, you have created a PowerShell script to provision a machine?
No. All the PowerShell did is the machine was already provisioned. I just went and added some software to it.
Did you install it
VMDM? Yep.
Yep. What's the difference from the start of boot up the machine on the Docker image file and then run the comments on the Docker image file? What's the difference?
You would actually have to have a Docker file that had the commands inside of it to build up that particular image, right? So if you did that, though, we could actually do that for you with this task here. So this task here takes a Docker file and a context folder and builds the image that we would then send up. But all these agents that are actually doing the work, they already exist, right? And we just go and we go in Azure, pull out one of them, say, hey, I need you to go do this build for me. And it just runs through all these commands. Pushes the image to Docker Hub. And then at that point, I don't need the image anymore. I don't need the build agent anymore. The image is now in Docker Hub safe. And then I pull from there for all the my rest of my deployment. Yeah, I don't change the image. All I do is I pass in on at runtime what I want the connection strings and stuff to be. Okay. Thanks. It looks like I'm out of time. I have a QA tomorrow. Tomorrow, I literally have a session where you just get to ask me questions. I'm going to have my computer up, and I'll answer all your questions tomorrow. Okay, thanks. See ya.